en los alrededores de la Plaza de la Constitución. Autoridades capitalinas justificaron la presencia policial, alegando que lo hacían por la conmemoración del aniversario del terremoto de 1985 que encabezará el presidente Enrique Peña Nieto el jueves. Miles de integrantes de la Coordinadora de Trabajadores de la Educación, la CENTE, que desde hace casi un mes protestan por la reforma educativa, marcharon del Monumento a la Revolución a la Plaza de las Tres Culturas. Los maestros estuvieron acompañados por estudiantes de la Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, la Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana y la Escuela Nacional de Antropología e Historia, que iniciaron un paro en solidaridad con los educadores. El líder del Movimiento de Regeneración Nacional llamó a todos los mexicanos a protestar en contra de las reformas que impulsa el gobierno de Enrique Peña Nieto. Los compañeros de Radio Guayacocotla con la información.
Andrés Manuel López Obrador hace otro llamado para marchar en contra de las reformas energética y hacendaria para este domingo 22 de septiembre.
Es muy importante que entre todos, de manera pacífica, logremos frenar las llamadas reformas energética y hacendaria, porque como lo hemos venido diciendo, no van a beneficiar en nada al pueblo de México, al contrario.
López Obrador, dirigente del Movimiento Regeneración Nacional Morena, está invitando para que juntos los mexicanos rescatemos al país de las reformas que impulsa el gobierno mexicano y que harían más graves todas las crisis que se viven en estos tiempos en México.
Van a profundizar la crisis económica, la crisis de bienestar social, la crisis de inseguridad, la crisis de violencia. Si se imponen estas reformas, la situación va a estar cada vez peor en el país, en poco tiempo, y nosotros no queremos eso. No queremos reconstruir a México a partir de escombros, y mucho menos del sufrimiento de los mexicanos. Por eso podemos evitar que esto suceda, y podemos expresarnos haciendo valer nuestros derechos como ciudadanos, de manera pacífica, sin caer en la trampa de la violencia. Por eso les invito a participar este domingo. Tengamos confianza, tengamos fe en la democracia. Es el pueblo el que manda, es el pueblo el que decide, pero hagamos valer nuestros derechos. Si nos quedamos con los brazos cruzados, pues van a hacer lo que les dé la gana los que se sienten amos y señores de México, y cuando nos vengamos a dar cuenta, el país va a estar destruido. Y esto nos afecta a nosotros, pero fundamentalmente a las nuevas generaciones. Que no nos reclamen nuestros hijos, nuestros nietos, que no hicimos nada cuando se estaba destruyendo el país. Que cuando menos nos quede la satisfacción, el orgullo de que podamos decirles, informarles el día de mañana que nosotros estuvimos a la altura de las circunstancias. Que los podamos ver a la cara, de frente, a los ojos, no avergonzarnos. Por eso te invito a participar y también te pido, ayúdanos a correr la voz. Ya sabes cómo está el cerco informativo.
La marcha a la que está convocando el dirigente de Morena, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, va a empezar desde el Ángel de la Independencia hasta llegar al Zócalo de la Ciudad de México. Ya estando ahí, la idea es hacer una asamblea con todos y todas los y las presentes. Desde la Voz de los Campesinos, en Guayacocotla, Veracruz, reportó Eduardo Méndez Salas.
En Paraguay asesinan a otro líder campesino que luchaba para evitar el desalojo de las familias dedicadas a la agricultura ante el avance de la propiedad latifundista para el cultivo extensivo de la soya transgénica.
Ayer otra vez en nuestro país se registró el asesinato de un líder campesino en el distrito de Horqueta, departamento de Concepción. En esta ocasión, Inocencio Sanabria, que pertenecía a una organización que luchaba en contra de la sojización, fue visitado en su casa por sicarios a bordo de una motocicleta, que lo asesinaron al instante y dejaron gravemente herido a su hijo de 20 años. Arnaldo Mendoza, de la organización Zonal Campesina de Concepción, nos dio algunos detalles y analizó la situación en el contexto del asesinato de líderes campesinos en el Paraguay. Ayer a la tarde ocurrió un nuevo asesinato en el asentamiento Arroyito. En realidad es muy preocupante la situación en el departamento. porque a pesar de la militarización para refuerzo de la seguridad, igual se dan casos de asesinatos. Esta es una situación muy lamentable.
Lamentable allá la Ñanetame.
Porque a pesar de la pobreza existente en este lugar, faltan políticas públicas que combatan con la extrema pobreza.
Realista enfrentar a la pobreza o totalmente ausente.
Ese es un error muy grave de las autoridades del gobierno, que respaldan además la sojización de la tierra. Existen rumores que Inocencio ya estaba amenazado de muerte. Seis asesinatos de líderes campesinos en todo el país ya se dieron desde el golpe parlamentario a Fernando Lugo. 132 son los casos desde 1989, año en que cayó el dictador Alfredo Stroessner, y ninguno de los casos tuvo justicia. Hasta el día de hoy no hay condenados ni arrestados por asesinatos a líderes campesinos. Reportó Javier Benítez de Radio Fe y Alegría.
Venezuela pagó el miércoles parte de su deuda externa mientras aumenta su inversión social.
Manos del poder comunal. Modelo económico desarrollado en Venezuela, donde la población se integra al desarrollo del país desde la autogestión. Venezolanos y venezolanas adquieren independencia económica.
La organización es el trabajo mutuo, es el trabajo en comunidad, es el trabajo desde el centro de los problemas.
Esta es una de las más de 1.400 comunas registradas en Venezuela. Se construyen gracias a la inversión social de la Revolución Bolivariana.
La inversión social, cuando uno compara los 14 años anteriores de 1985 a 1998 con los 14 años del 99 al 2012 en que estuvo el presidente Chávez, la inversión social pasó del 36,6%, como podemos observar en la lámina, al 62,5%.
Un alto porcentaje que no impide a la nación suramericana cumplir con el pago de su deuda externa.
La solidez económica le permite a Venezuela cancelar la deuda externa de este año. Para algunos analistas, este hecho cobra mayor importancia cuando el país no ha sacrificado su inversión social.
Para el diputado socialista Jesús Farías, el pago de la deuda externa revela la fortaleza económica y financiera de Venezuela. Además, abre la posibilidad a nuevos créditos internacionales.
Nosotros estamos pagando la deuda externa y no lo estamos haciendo como ocurría en el pasado a costa de las condiciones de vida de los trabajadores. Desarrollamos la economía, tenemos solvencia financiera, cumplimos con nuestros compromisos internacionales y estamos en capacidad de desarrollar planes sociales de históricas dimensiones.
Según Farías, Venezuela no tiene pensado recurrir al Fondo Monetario Internacional. Ángel Cedeño, Telesur, Caracas, Venezuela.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
That shit was pumping. Told you'd like it.
What's up, y'all? This is Lyrics Born in the house. I'm chilling on the Global Local with my man Sandino, baby. FRSC 101.1 FM. Oh!
And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop Pierre's Broadsides. A couple of phone-in guests may be calling, one from Los Angeles, another from San Lorenzo Valley. We'll see if they show up. I always keep my fingers crossed when these last-minute appointments are made. The name of the show is Bathrop Pierre's Broadsides. The date today, in case you're listening in and you want to make sure that you're listening to a live show, is September 19th, 2013. So if you're calling on that Thursday evening, between 6 and 8, yes, you are calling a live program, and you can reach me by phone at 427-3772 or 469-3119. Again, with the complete area code 831-427-3772. 831-469-3119. My name is Robert Norse, and this is a twice-weekly show which is archived on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website at huffsantacruz, all one word, all small letters, .org, huffsantacruz.org. You can catch shows that you've missed. You can catch parts of shows that you've missed. You can miss shows that you'd rather not have catched or caught, and so forth. So, welcome to the show. I'm going to proceed directly without the usual musical interlude because I've got a lot of stuff to cover, and I'm likely to be getting a number of phone calls if folks carry on what they said they were going to do a couple hours ago when I spoke with them on the phone, kind of unexpectedly. So, a couple things that are not going to be happening, but that may happen on Sunday, right before the protest downtown against the seizure of the sidewalks by merchants and conservative police forces, really, is one way to look at it. I'm going to be doing a 3.5-hour show, as usual, on Sunday morning, and then we're going to be having a protest downtown on Pacific Avenue involving a speak-out, a chow-down, possibly a demarcation of the kind of a memorial for the spaces that are going to be destroyed for public use and turned into a sterile transit commercial-only kind of area where you will not be allowed to sit down, you will not be allowed to hold up a sign, you will not be allowed to politically table, you will not be allowed to perform with any kind of a cap or guitar case. You will not be allowed to display art. You will not be allowed to vend jewelry or anything of that kind. There are some small spaces left. Scott Collins of the city staff has criticized me for suggesting that I'm calling this whole thing a ban, but of course it is a ban on performing, sitting, showing artwork, vending anything, political tabling, for 95% of the sidewalk on Pacific Avenue, and that is, in essence, a significant ban on that kind of activity. It does allow you to fight with some other folks for the spaces, but given the new rules that have been laid down, it seems clear that this is a hostile move toward those who wish to use the community spaces as they have been traditionally used. And it's a disgrace. It's a shame. It is also part of a cultural war against, I would call it against the counterculture, against poor and homeless people, against visible poverty, against the street scene. And it looks like there's an incoming call. Let's see who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, Dennis, you called.
Yes, Dennis, thank you. I was at a loss for the combination, but I have it, and now you can perhaps advise people what will be coming up at 8 o'clock on your show, if anything.
Well, the only thing I have to talk about is a programmer who slept through the night in the studio Tuesday night.
Oh, no.
Can we discuss that on the air?
Oh, okay. Well, that'll be we might have to snore through that one, Dennis. But I guess
that was the issue.
Yeah. Well, I know there's no law against programming or even no rule, but we do discourage it, I believe, right?
My understanding is that sleeping in a studio is not to happen.
Oh, anyway. I thought we had a meeting on that one a couple months ago, and that was somewhat changed. But we can talk about that when you come in. What kind of music will you be playing? I know you're doing your usual From the Cream to the Dregs from 8 to 11.
I'll be playing CDs, Robert.
Oh, well.
We'll see you later. Bye.
All right, then. Thank you. And that was Uncle Dennis. He's a mainstay of Free Radio, or I should say Free Streamio, because we ain't no radio station right now. We are streaming, which is better than nothing, but far worse than what we were doing before. We're looking for a place to put up a transmitter, and we don't have that right now. We finally formed a special subcommittee to look into that, and perhaps the subcommittee will get somewhere. I don't know how far it'll get because I'm on the subcommittee, but who knows? You never can tell. We might actually pull it together. If you have any thoughts about where we might place a transmitter, this is though we are technically an illegal station, we are also a station that has broadcast continuously or streamed continuously with a combination mostly broadcast since 1995 through the generosity and the courage and the, well, with the enthusiasm of the Santa Cruz community, even including the Santa Cruz City Council of all people. There's actually a plaque on the wall proclaiming from former Mayor Mike Rotkin his regard for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And indeed, we are a community resource. And, of course, we're much less of one when we're not broadcasting. So help us. We need a place just outside the trough of the downtown Santa Cruz area where we can place a transmitter, whether it's a tall tree or a building, you name it. Any ideas you have, please let us know because, well, then we can broadcast. You can contact freakradio.org if you go to the website, where you'll also find schedules, you'll find information, you'll find an opportunity to make donations if you want to donate other things like equipment or money. And you can also leave messages if you have commentary on the programs. Let us know what you think of what we're doing. If you want to be a part of Free Radio, there are broadcast times open. It doesn't involve us. You have to share some of the expenses of the station in terms of rental and equipment upkeep, but you it's a relatively small amount of money per month. Not small for some, but in terms of commercial radio, much smaller than it would be. We have rules about no commercial activity and so forth, but we are a communitarian station, and if you've got stuff you want to broadcast, this is likely the place to do it. If you're interested in that, again, go to freakradio.org. And if you want to make a phone call in because you haven't got a computer or your computer suddenly goes blinko, you can give a call to the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's my line. 831-423-4833. That's 831-423-HUFF. And I will pass on the word to the folks in the studio and the rest of the collective. If you have some suggestions, ideas, or whatever. So, I'm going to begin with some street interviews, and then I believe we're going to be receiving a call, I'm hoping, from a Los Angeles activist who's facing the Los Angeles City Council, I believe he said to me earlier today, but we'll find out exactly what's going on there if and when he does call in. Until then, let's begin with some interviews from the street. Having a little trouble, of course, with the equipment, as one might expect, but don't go away. We are going to deal with that, and I guess while I'm trying and working on dealing with that, it's always a problem when the wires get switched around here. Let's see how they're doing. Yes, I see. I think I see our problem. Juxtaposing a few wires, I think we can deal with this issue. And perhaps this is where we're going to actually be able to hear some of these street interviews. Let's see if this works.
We're here at the Red Church. It's September 16, 2013. We have a report from, I'm not sure what this man's current identity is, but what is your report, sir? What's your name, and who the hell are you?
Faustos from Belgium.
You are the Belgian Faustos. It's about 5:30 in the afternoon. Go ahead.
Reporting on a number of, on the situation of a number
Let's
of...
Let's turn to slow speed, shall we? Go ahead.
I'm reporting on the situation on a number of my friends and acquaintances who have been sleeping in the courtyard of Calvary Episcopal Church, the old Red Church downtown. And this has been a kind of a tacitly accepted thing that the pastor hasn't given explicit approval to people to sleep there. But people have been sleeping there, and no trespassing calls or charges have been made. And the only thing that's happened is that usually in the morning the first alarm guy would come down at 6 to 7 in the morning and wake people up and ask them to leave, and they would leave, and then that would be okay. And this has been going on for months and months, maybe a year. But this week...
A special new procedure was followed.
Yeah. I mean, they came down like gangbusters. Have you ever seen Elliot Ness and the
Elliot Ness and the Untouchables.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like breaking apart, you know, liquor bottles and causing a whole The police came down and they with five cars, mind you, for 10 homeless people and 10 like old ladies sleeping in the church.
Old ladies can be a hazard, a trip and fall hazard, if nothing else.
And really, we're very, very rude and rough and brusque. And they said, "You come back here, and you're going to be arrested." So I'm wondering what's going on. What's going on? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the pastor knows. You can try asking him.
Was he there at the time?
He wasn't there at the time. This was like 6 in the morning. But
what day was this?
This was sometime early in the week, maybe last Monday or Tuesday.
And we've been talking with
Faustos from Brazil.
And I want to hear more about your other incident. But you sir, you were there when this happened?
No, I wasn't there, but I had something to add to the...
What's your name?
My name's Champion.
And Champion, what day was this? Do you remember?
It was a couple weeks back. I'm not sure exactly what the day was. I was sitting at the boardwalk with my 13-week...
Before we hear the story about the boardwalk from Champion, I did get additional kind of information about a police roust at the Red Church. It's a church at the corner of the Cavalry Church at the corner of Cedar and Lincoln Streets, across from the Farmer's Market in downtown Santa Cruz and across from Jack's Hamburgers and Cynthia Matthews' historic house, which some felt the reason that she had such a heavy objection to the once-a-week feeding that Father Joel Miller does every Monday, in which you're hearing interviews from that general time period, which I play regularly every week. I had heard that there was such a raid, and it was probably earlier this week, or maybe last week. Also, that when I talked to Father Miller about sort of collateral issues that, because I hadn't heard about the raid, he did talk about the difficulties of people sleeping at the church because there weren't adequate toilet facilities open at night. I guess somebody forgot to bring the key, or they were afraid of too much poo-poo in the poo-poo machine or whatever, or who knows what, or maybe there was nobody to monitor it, or because the Red Church has been responsible for really helping out with a shelter program, a mini shelter program for 20 people, along with six other churches, where they kind of rotate every night, and they do allow people to sleep inside the church. And we hear, and of course at the Red Church, people be kind of sleeping outside because they have no other place to go, or if they go, I mean, they're hopeful that's, however illegal it is, because it's illegal everywhere on all private and public property in Santa Cruz to sleep outside unless you're in a backyard that's, or a front of side yard that is shielded from the street. It's illegal to sleep in your vehicle after 11. It's illegal to sleep on any public property after 11. It's the sleeping ban of Santa Cruz, which is notorious. And attempts to modify it or ameliorate it or make it less harsh by a change that says if you're on a waiting list at one of the city-approved waiting lists, because you can't really get into a shelter at all, they're all full, you can get your ticket dismissed. The problem then becomes the police are now using other tactics. They're either falsely claiming that you're trespassing on public property, which generally isn't the case, although new curfews have been imposed on big swaths of previously open public property, even property you'd think would be constitutionally subject to peaceful protest at night, like in front of the county building or in front of City Hall, or you would think it would be your right to hold up a sign at night. No, not in Santa Cruz. That's now been declared illegal in order to stop at nighttime Occupy Wall Street-type protests or even homeless protests without any kind of stir from the local American Civil Liberties Union. No objections from the Santa Cruz City Council liberals, of whom there are supposedly at least two. Former Mayor Don Lane and former bicyclista, or current bicyclista, Micah Posner, who so far declines to answer various questions on these issues that I continue to pose, and will hope that he does at some point. In any case, Miller may have himself, Father Joel Miller, may have given the police permission to do this. I don't know. I'm going to ask him probably on Monday. Maybe I'll even ask him before then. See what the story is. But the fact that as Faustos, our informant here, says, police and squad cars are sent to roust and drive people into the night who are sleeping around the Red Church and doing nothing else that is criminal, is itself a crime, clearly. I don't know what to call it, a crime against humanity or a crime against conscience or a crime against decency, but it's obviously a violation of a kind of a basic right and dignity, a fundamentally cruel and callous attack on people who have no choices. And this is the currency that's becoming far, you know, more and more accepted in Santa Cruz because they want to make the city unwelcoming, and they're smearing homeless people with the fearful specter of the drug user and the mentally ill person who has to be for his own or her own good taken out of the public scene, or these, you know, wild and crazy travelers who have no respect for our town, or lots of negative imagery, which has always been the case against people outside, but has become far more prominent with the needle hysteria that was drummed up by the Clean Team and the Take Back Santa Cruz, and is now being made a major phony public safety issue by the Public Safety Task Force, which holds meetings, will be holding meetings every Wednesday now at 6 o'clock at the police station generally throughout the month of October. They were every 2 weeks, now they're going to be every week. So, let's hear a little more, and again, at any moment we may get an incoming caller and from out of town who's going to talk about something that I was completely unaware of, unacquainted with, and still don't know much about, having to do with the attempt of the Los Angeles City Council to shut him down, as the Santa Cruz City Council had me arrested a decade ago for a silent, fleeting, don't act like a bunch of fascist gesture after the mayor had violated his own rule by not allowing people to speak who had been waiting for half an hour. And instead of demanding to speak, as perhaps we should have, I simply made a mock Nazi salute. I was arrested for it and have been suing them in court for the last decade, and not getting very far, mind you, but establishing a principle that you can make gestures of dissent in city council, and I've done so since, without fear of a lawful arrest. Now, whether you can... You know, you unlawful arrests are a dime a dozen these days, and it's quite possible that you may not be able to find a lawyer to sue on your behalf, because it can be a very, very long haul. But the fact is, it is still legitimate to say in front of a city council anything you want, and you do anything you want, provided it doesn't materially disrupt the meeting, however much against the, quote, rules it is. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, so I was at, this is Colin Campbell Clyde, and I was at the public safety meeting.
Colin, let me interrupt you, because I'm expecting a long-distance call from Los Angeles on this line. I do want to hear your task force report. Can I get you to call back? Are you going to be around in an hour?
Yeah, you want me to wait an hour?
Well, the reason I do is I got two backed-up calls potentially coming in on this line. One of them is from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Another is from the San Lorenzo Valley water people who are facing a massive raise in water rates I want to talk about. Well, your report is important. It's just I'm going to try to juggle this, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I got you. I can call back in a bit. And just really quick, I will say that it was very, very interesting, especially what the defense attorneys had to say.
I want to hear that, and I know that it's likely that whole audio is going to be posted on the task force website, which is accessible through the City of Santa Cruz website. But I want to hear more details, but can you call back?
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Thank you, man. And that's Colin Campbell Clyde, who took time out to sit in the task force of on public hysteria, as I like to call it, or task force on public safety. And that could be our other caller. Hey there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yes, hi. My name is Paul Cook, and Robert North asked me to call in about First Amendment retaliation that I've experienced with the city of Baldwin Park.
Ah, yes. Well, this, in fact, is Robert North, so welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, hello. Good day. This is Paul Cook speaking. I'm also known as the boxing lawyer in Baldwin Park, California, which is in Los Angeles County.
So you're known as, say that again a little more slowly, it's a little hard to hear you. Go ahead. The boxing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm known as the boxing lawyer in Baldwin Park, California.
So you are a lawyer, eh?
Yes, I'm an attorney at law. I was licensed in June.
And you're also a boxer.
Yes, I am a boxer.
Welterweight, heavyweight, lightweight?
Lightweight.
Lightweight, but not lightweight as far as the L.A. City Council goes, apparently.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's not L.A., it's the city of Baldwin Park, which is in Los Angeles County.
Again, the city of, say the name again?
Baldwin, like Alex Baldwin, and Park, like a park.
So Baldwin Park is a community of what, a couple hundred thousand people, or?
It's about, officially it's 78,000 people, but with the undocumented population, it's probably closer to 90,000 to 100,000.
And what kind of issues do you customarily bring to the Baldwin Park City Council?
The issues that we've been bringing up recently, I've only gotten involved in the last 3 months, and that's because the city of Baldwin Park kept stating that they had no money for their city boxing program. And when we looked into the budget, we discovered that it's a lot worse than that. We found out that the director of Parks and Recreation misappropriated the budget. And that he commingled the boxing account with the account of the city fleet, which is the car fleet. And the reason that he's done that is that we suspect strongly that he is paying off bribes for the city council on dirty favors, because the city fleet is paying out the towing company, which gives political contributions to all the council members and the mayor.
Now, do you have any allies in the media?
We've been trying to contact the San Gabriel Valley Tribune, and the San Gabriel Valley Tribune somehow is allied with the mayor and the mayor pro tem and council member Garcia. So every time we put out our stories, they say they're interested, but they never get published. But when the three of the majority faction in politics puts out their story, the stories get published immediately, without the minority viewpoint or opposing viewpoint getting published, such as mine.
Now, I got a call from you, Paul, and we're talking with Paul Cook, a boxing lawyer from Baldwin Park in Southern California, suburb of Los Angeles. I got a call from you earlier today, and, you know, I was half asleep, and I hope I caught some of it. But you were pointing out that you had read about my case, which I actually just talked about before you got on the air. Have you been listening on the stream to this, or...?
No, I read your case because I'm a lawyer and I'm interested in First Amendment rights. So There was a UCLA Law Review article that pointed to your case, and at that time the case wasn't decided by the Ninth Circuit. I found your case, the North case, to be very interesting and also very very confusing in terms of how the district court kept dismissing your case or trying to against the city, and I was quite upset about that because I'm going through similar struggles with this city. It's just so hard to expose corruption or to speak out against the city. And if the courts are not going to protect the First Amendment, it's like the common citizen doesn't have any other avenue to go to petition or to ask for review.
Paul, what about the people around you? Do you have much support from other groups in the community? Often the media sides with, you know, the powers that be. The courts are fundamentally conservative, though, you know, the Ninth Circuit is more liberal than most, but it didn't really help me. I got to a jury, and they turned down the attempt to get damages from the two mayors who had me arrested. And, you know, right now that's on appeal, but I think the chances of that winning are very slim. But as I said before you came on the air, we did establish at the Ninth Circuit level, through an en banc panel, no less, that the rule is not thou shalt do whatever the city council tells you to do or risk being arrested if you don't leave the room and they tell you to, but thou shalt not disrupt a council meeting, where disrupt means disrupt. It means actually stop the council meeting from proceeding. I mean, if you moon them, if you call them fucking idiots, if you turn your back on them and talk to the audience, if you wave a flag, provided it doesn't stop the meeting, or, you know, whatever you do, that, even if it's against all the rules, is not a basis for having you arrested on a charge of disrupting a public meeting. That's, I think, was the ruling of the Ninth Circuit Court. But let me hear what happened to you at the L.A. City Council. I mean, the Baldwin Park City Council.
Oh, well, there's two things. So before we go into that, I just wanted to say I definitely laughed and appreciated Kaczynski's Ninth Circuit ruling on your case, personally. And I definitely remembered his line that said that he agreed with he affirmed the majority opinion because they were right, is what he said. And he insinuated you know, your Nazi salute to the city council in Santa Cruz may have been appropriate, seeing that they are trying to kill free speech like the Nazis did. So I found that all very entertaining. At the last city council meeting, well, Mayor Lozano, who's in the Manuel Lozano, who's in the majority faction yesterday, what he often does is he often will not cut off people even though they have 3 minutes. And similar to the Santa Cruz City Council, he likes to cite that the municipal code says if you disturb free speech, he has the right to cut you off or throw you out of the city council meeting. So he's thrown out people like Gregory Tuttle, who's a small business owner, for, you know, calling him an idiot or being imbecilic. And, I mean, I know that that's not courteous, but it's not, as you stated earlier, disturbing speech. Now, when it came to me, I was speaking about how they are, his camp is most likely committing absentee voter fraud and definitely ballot voting fraud, and we have evidence of that. And as I was reading the letter, it seems like that he cut me short, and on top of that, he was threatening to report me to the state bar and disciplinary charges. And, I mean, that is just, for me, I can stand it because I'm an attorney, but the city council in Baldwin Park likes to bully the common member of the public when they have any kind of disagreement or starts exposing their crimes and frauds in Baldwin Park. So I'm really against this.
Now, are you alone in your struggle? I mean, are other people noticing problems with the mayor and the city council in terms of their desire to repress speech they don't like? Or are you pretty much a lone wolf here, other than perhaps Mr. Tuttle, you mentioned, got dumped for calling them idiots?
Oh, yeah. Well, Mr. Tuttle used to be the lone wolf here. I think for 7 years he's been battling Marlene Garcia, who's the council member, and she's the one that influences the other two to vote the way that she wants to vote. And so he's been pressing on with that fight, but recently the police associations actually joined us in that fight. And there are many members of the community who are up in arms as well about the way that the majority party, who have been in power for 14 years, have been ruling. And recently we're the newest member of those who are speaking out, and we're the boxing club of the city. And it's mainly made up of high schoolers and I should say high school students and college students. And it's great just seeing that they go back home and inform their parents of what's going on in the city, because there's a great undocumented population here. So they're afraid of getting involved and never speak out, but the children are citizens. So they go back home and tell their parents what's happening at the city council meeting.
Now, do you get a lot of students coming to these council meetings to back you up? It sounds like this has only happened to you kind of quite recently in the last few months, right?
Here's one of my boxers right now, and yes, we've been going 3 months, almost every 2 weeks, which is almost every council meeting, and the head coach is coming, and many students have been coming and supporting the boxing program. They're fed up with the cut hours. The director is trying to double the price, and we've informed them of the misappropriation of the budget, so they're very well aware of what's happening in the city. And the reason that the police association is involved is that they want to outsource the police for the sheriff. And the pretextual reason always given, as was given for the boxing club cuts, was that there's no money in the city. But I'm not speaking on behalf of the police president, but we suspect as well that the main reason that Marlene Garcia wants to get rid of the police association is that they've ticketed Raquel Monica Garcia, another council member, and they exercised their right to assemble and to have free speech. And there's a current lawsuit going on with the police association for First Amendment retaliation by council members.
Considerably different than my situation. I mean, I'm usually almost always on the other side from the police department. They are, if not arresting me, trying to ridicule me, belittle what I'm doing. Or, you know, they actually, one occasion I was assaulted at city council by the deputy chief of police, Steve Clark. Even prior to, I was strong-armed at the council before the mayor even announced I was under arrest and for trying to speak for 2 minutes at the microphone on an issue. After they changed the rules, specifically, they kind of acknowledged to deal with the fact that I do take the time that is allowed to speak on a number of issues, particularly since my issue in Santa Cruz, as you probably know, has to do with homeless civil rights as well as police abuses. I mean, I can't speak to boxers and lawyers are probably two of the groups of lawyers I have very little respect for generally, but I'm glad when an individual like yourself stands up. How about the lawyer community in Baldwin Park? Are they supporting you at all? Are you a pariah? Are you sort of regarded as an amusing eccentric? What's the deal?
Well, there's not much of a lawyering community in Baldwin Park. Like I said, it's an undocumented community here. I've graduated UCLA Law School, and so I've come back and I didn't start off this way. I was just trying to understand what was happening. But I think they're trying to demonize me as of yesterday, that I'm unethical for bringing up all these violations of the California Code and the Constitution in front of the city council and the mayor. But I do have a strong support from the boxers. And there's other organizations which I don't feel comfortable right now naming, but they are following the story very closely, that are civil rights lawyering organizations, and I've been asked to perhaps draft a media press release about all the things that are happening in Baldwin Park, like I said.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying I started my training with civil rights as well. So going back to, I can see why most people don't like lawyers, but I would like to hope that, you know, I'm doing the right thing, or our groups are doing the right thing to look out for the rights of the common individual.
Well, you know, frequently, you know, you get into these situations where, in this case, the police, I guess, are trying to outsource the police department, turn it over to the sheriff. So, you know, you have a group of people who are about to be, I guess, bounced out of their jobs, are concerned whether, you know, I might be against the police in this situation, because it depends on how they're treating poor and homeless people in their community and how they're treating people generally. But I think I can understand they certainly have the right, as any other group or bunch of individuals should have the right, to speak at city council, to raise issues, and, of course, to expose corruption if that's what's really going on. I mean, I'm sure that I frankly believe it's quite likely in Santa Cruz we have similar corrupt involvement of towing companies, and whether it's the police or the sheriffs, it certainly, there's a situation where homeless people are losing their vehicles. Ordinary citizens get their vehicles towed at the snap of the fingers, and it becomes a really costly deal, particularly if you're poor and you live in your vehicle and you have your stuff in your vehicle. It's a horrible situation. So what's your next step? What's your next move? How can people follow this? You have a blog on this issue, right?
Yes, I have a blog, and that blog's gotten quite a number of hits, and I think over 80 countries now have been viewing that blog, and it's just, I just started reporting on what was happening. It wasn't anything special. I've always been a blogger, but I just wrote about my daily life, nothing special about the city. But once the boxers started demonstrating against the city of Baldwin Park, I just wrote about how the kids got involved, and once I started doing that, it's taken off, and I know that the city council members and the management team are continually viewing it and reading it, and they hate it, so they want it to go away, but it's not going to go away. I mean,
and how do people read this blog? Let us know how to get to it.
That's a very good question. Thank you. The blog is www.alchemistcook.blogspot.com. Once again, it's www.alchemistcook.blogspot.com.
Spell Alchemist Cook.
It's A-L-C-H-E-M-I-S-T-C-O-O-K. So it's, once again, www.alchemistcook.blogspot.com. And it's quite an entertaining read. As I said, it's been in about 80 countries right now.
For those who may be having trouble following this or who want more details, that would be a good place to go, because that's where a lot of the information is currently logged.
Right, and the story builds up, and you start to see the corruption coming out. And Royal Coaches here, their towing company, has made $10 million over 7,000 tows in 1 year. I mean, that is just an insane amount. And they were the ones that the director of Parks and Recreation hit up for money for our boxing equipment, because the city has misappropriated the budget, and there's no more money in the boxing budget, even though we weren't supposed to have spent it all this year. I mean, he keeps asking Royal Coaches for more money.
How big is the boxing budget usually in the city of Baldwin Park?
It was $23,000 to $24,000 a year, and so that's enough to support Monday through Thursday. But the director cut the Monday through Thursday to a Wednesday this year, and now he's made it to a Wednesday this year, and he's cut it from I think 20 hours to 15 hours. And so you can't sustain a boxing program on those kind of funds. And so we did research and we did all the costing calculations, because all you need to do to run a boxing program is have coaches. And we found out half the money should still be in the budget, but he just ran out of it because he's commingled the funds with the city fleet funds, and that's where they pay royal coaches. And we have documents where they paid royal coaches $750 for toes that are only 10 miles. I mean, that's insane. I mean, this is exactly how the city is paying back these political contributions that the towing company is making.
Interesting. But, I mean, isn't the police department itself then colluding with this? It's kind of strange. If they are, why are they supporting you? I mean, you know, isn't it going to expose their own dirty underwear?
Well, no, babe. The president of the police association isn't happy with the towing either, and he's stated that they've been picking on the undocumented and just terrorizing them. And what's happened is that Marlene Garcia, the council member, she's the one with the controlling vote, tells everybody what to do. And so Royal Coaches gives her money. You know, we have witnesses that have seen Manny Carrillo, who's the director of Parks and Rec, pick up uniforms from Royal Coaches for Marlene Garcia's daughter and computers. And so she tells everybody what to do. And so as a result, the police just have to do what she wants, or else she'll fire them, or she'll retaliate against them, or end a police retaliation lawsuit. She didn't promote two qualified officers to become sergeants. They were passed up three times, and so that's why they were suing, because those two officers were speaking out against the city council. So
Have you methodically documented this on your website so people can kind of catch this information in a concise form?
Yes, well, how the director has been cooking the books and misappropriating the budget, I've put scans of documents on there that we've received, and so, yes, people can look at that. And
summaries of the documents, too, so those who don't have the patience to wade through?
Yes, I've done it. I've done all of that, so it's an easy read.
And again, for those who are interested, this is the Alchemist Cook .blogspot.com website to go to. We are talking with Paul Cook, who is a boxer and a lawyer down in Baldwin Park. And I'm going to have to kind of end this pretty quickly, Paul, because I got somebody else who's calling in. But again, as I mentioned to you before, I do a show on Sundays from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. And you're welcome to call in with any updates, or if you want to have somebody else talk about these issues. I'm a little bit confused about, I guess, the people who are misappropriating the police department money. It's not going to the police department and the officers. You say it's going to tows that are benefiting the Parks and Rec Department. Is that the situation?
No, we don't know exactly. Well, we know that the money, the $10 million, that was made by Royal Coaches Towing. And the Royal Coaches, they give political contributions and probably other type of benefits to the council members and mayor, and we're not sure how. If anything, the police accounts have been commingled as well in a general account, so they're having their funds misappropriated as well. So
their funds are being used to, the suspicion is they're being used to pay off the towing company?
No, their funds were used for some capital construction. Their forfeiture funds were used to pay off. I don't know this 100%. I could ask the president of the police association to call you. But
in any case, their funds are being misused, is what you're saying.
Yeah, everybody's funds are being misused, it seems like, in this city.
And when these issues are raised by you and others at city council, you're facing retaliation and censorship from the council?
Yes, I am definitely facing retaliation and censorship. I've had the chief of police, who is not actually in support of her officers and men, the chief of right now, and so she actually had her lieutenant call me to stop asking questions around the city about this information that's going on, and that is First Amendment in her color of law, as a chief of police just for asking questions. And I can imagine that would be quite threatening for a regular employee. And when I tried to file complaints against her, the city manager, and the human resources manager for planning all this out, which I found out through other sources that they did, they called the police on me again. And they tried to press the panic button, which wasn't working. Or the human resources manager tried to press the panic button that wasn't working at the time. I don't know. I think the SWAT team comes out or something, just only for filing a complaint against them. And
so wait a minute. Did the SWAT team actually appear at your house or at your office?
Well, no. I was at City Hall when I was trying to file these complaints.
And did they show up there in uniform and try to block you from filing?
No, I was very lucky. Some informants in the city have told me that the button was actually broken, and they wouldn't have known if I hadn't come in that day. So I thought that was really funny.
So in other words, they tried to do it, but they actually it was because of equipment failure that you didn't get to meet the SWAT team.
That is correct. That is exactly correct. So instead, they had two officers come in instead, and they were very polite and very cordial, those officers. I thought that they were not going to be very friendly, and they understood that this was all political.
But were you able to file your complaint, Paul?
No, I never did. They said, you know, the human resources manager, the TC Alora, said no complaint forms are available, but when I stepped into the elevator escorted by the officers, they told me to get it online. But the reason that I didn't file any complaint forms is it goes back to the same people that I'm complaining against, which is the city manager, Vijay Singha, and they'll just throw it away. So there was no point. But what I did instead was I wrote the whole story up on my blog, and readers of my blog had basically emailed the council members and the mayor and the management team and said this is a violation of the First Amendment rights of freedom of speech. So I thought that was good and much more effective than an internal complaint.
You know, I think that's good, too. I think doing both is fine as well. I mean, if you file a complaint and they throw it away, just keep a copy to indicate that you get a date stamped, get it clear that, you know, you did file it. And then if you ever take legal action or some legislative committee investigates or if you get a mob of people together who actually, you know, support some kind of just change in the system through one means or another, you can show them the documentation and there's a paper trail. So,
agree with you.
Yeah.
So, can I say one last thing before we wrap it up?
I'll give you take a few minutes to finish up what you may not have covered and what, you know, we can maybe look forward to hearing you cover in the next time you come on.
I'm just hoping if there's any listeners out there that would be able to help me get the story out there, that would be much appreciated. Only because, like I said, there seems to be some kind of political tie to the San Gabriel Valley Tribune, which isn't widely read anyways. But they're owned by the same group that owns the Los Angeles Times, and we just need to have more media coverage on these issues that are going on in the city of Baldwin Park, because they've been getting away with this for way too long, and I've just come back into town. I was raised here since the age of 2 to 18, and I got a full scholarship to UCLA and never came back. I'm back here now for different reasons, and now I'm seeing what's going on, and I'm just pointing it out. So we need change, and, I mean, we need a lot of help and support because, I mean, they are perpetrating election fraud both in the ballot and both by vote by mail, and we just don't have the resources or team, and we do want to get onto this. I mean, we're living in an oligarchic dictatorship if this is truly going on, because we're not the democratic checks and balances process is broken, because if they make bad decisions, we could never vote them out as a city.
Hear, hear. Yeah, and also, of course, because my interest is civil rights for the poorest people, undocumented people, homeless folks, you know, folks who are, you know, on the edge of losing their housing because of the rising rents and profiteering and foreclosure fraud. If you find out more about that in your area and you want to report on that as well when you call back in, I know that's not, you know, it sounds like boxing with the city council is your main deal at the moment. But, you know, I wish you luck with that. But, you know, that's my interest, too. So think about that. And for folks, again, who want to tune in on Paul's website, it is
www.alchemistcook.blogspot.com.
Is it Hook or Cook?
Cook, like to cook food. That's my last name.
Like a cook. That's what I thought it was. Well, listen, thank you. And feel free to keep me updated by email. And that's, I guess, all I've got.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time that you've given me today, Mr. North, and you have a very good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.
And that's it for Paul Cook from Baldwin Park, California. A very unexpected phone call. Kind of off the beaten track for me. I actually, as far as media goes, I did get an email from J.M. Brown, the Sentinel reporter. I sometimes put reporter in quotes for J.M. Brown because I don't like his reporting. Generally. He, however, wanted to know what was coming up with our protest on Sunday, the protest against the shut down the street performers, street vendors, or crowd them out of the thin the herd, if you will, on Pacific Avenue, that they were trying to oppose in a protest at 1:30 on Sunday in front of Forever 21. And he's maybe going to mention it or read about it and then put something in the story. I don't know. I sent him a flyer about it. I'm going to try to post something on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and we'll see if anything happens there. There will be an organizational meeting on Saturday at 5 o'clock at the Occupy Santa Cruz site, which is we've been meeting there for about a year now in front of the post office every week after the Food Not Bombs meal at 4 o'clock on Saturday. So on Saturday, we're going to do a little more organizing, sign-making, scheming and conferring and preparing for Sunday's 1:30 protest and for next Tuesday's city council meeting at 3 o'clock when there will be a slam-dunk rubber stamping of these ordinances. They're happening, it'll probably be happening pretty shortly after 3. It's not going to be at 2 o'clock. The council meeting doesn't start at 2 as it did last a council meeting Tuesday, but it's going to start at 3 as it normally does. And I guess we'll be there. There'll be food available at both the Sunday protest at 1:30 in front of Forever 21. And there will be food available. Joe Schultz will be providing hot, tasty soup on the at the 3 o'clock meeting at City Council 2 days later, next Tuesday, when the council attempts to ram this sucker down our throats. And I encourage people to come to both these meetings and demonstrations, not because it's going to have an earth-shaking effect necessarily on the city council, but it becomes an opportunity to share our information with each other, to form some kind of solidarity, to plan what we can do for the future, to understand different ways to address these issues, to document the police abuses that are going on daily. It has nothing to do even with these ordinances just make it worse and give the police more tools and power, but they already have far too many tools on Pacific Avenue to run people off, to run people around, to deny people the right to engage in traditional, innocent First Amendment activity. There are those two words again, First Amendment. Free speech activity, freedom of assembly activity, using public spaces in ways that the community has a right to use them, different aspects of the community, different parts of the community. Not just the merchants, not just the police and hosts, yellow jacket hosts and their little outfits walking around, pushing you along with their sort of a friendly fascist smiling approach, but everybody has a right to be there. Not just customers, not just tourists who have money, but the community that's poor, the people that want to lay out their stuff on the sidewalk. And that small amount of sidewalk that is left, less than 25% of the sidewalk is currently available on Pacific Avenue and 0% of the sidewalk in other business districts where there are adjoining buildings, because you cannot right now be 10 feet from a building, 10 feet from a crosswalk, 10 feet from a kiosk, 10 feet from a bench, 10 feet from a directory sign, 10 feet from a piece of artwork, 10 feet from an imagined spare change meter. And I think that's the case. There was some ambiguity about that. 10 feet from a kiosk, 10 feet from a sidewalk cafe. Now it's going to be 14 feet from all these things, which reduces space in most places almost to the vanishing point. And leaves other people with only now an even smaller space to set up, 4 by 4 feet, which is four of those little squares in a square 2 by 2 on Pacific Avenue. Try and fit two performers into that area. I dare you. It also means you have to be 12 foot away from the next performer If you have a cup or a guitar case out or there's a table set up, it means you can't put out a blanket or anything that isn't stiff, that isn't perpendicular to the sidewalk, so-called freestanding device. I was in error in suggesting that you would have to put your guitar case on top of a box. I thought that was the case. After conferring with Scott Collins, the staff member, I came to understand that you don't have to do that, which is nice. However, that doesn't mean the space is any less constricted. And what you have to do, and you cannot do the most natural thing, which is, and the cheapest and most inexpensive thing, which is to lay out a blanket and do that. And somehow, the upscale hoity-toity folks think that you should be forced to use more aesthetic devices. This is, you know, part seems to me part and parcel of the drive away the poor kind of thing that's really been going on. There's a meeting tonight of the San Lorenzo Water District. Apparently, there's a huge rise in water rates coming up, according to a man who gave me a call shortly after Paul Cook from Baldwin Park did, the man you just heard on the air. But he may not be able to call in because I think he has this meeting coming down, and maybe he can give us a report later if he's so still interested. I think he may do that, but I'm not sure. So let's hope that Colin Campbell Clyde is listening and maybe can call in to the show, because I know he went to this task force meeting which had Bob Lee, the district attorney, who's been spending hundreds of thousands of dollars going after political protesters with Occupy Wall Street, the Santa Cruz 11, as we called ourselves. We were just witnesses to or present in a vacant bank building that was occupied for 3 days, and they have spent, as I said, several hundred thousand dollars and intend to spend more going after us in an attempt to, I think, chill the belief that and crush the spirits of those who are raising issues in the new ways that people in Egypt, people in Tunisia, people in Bahrain, people of the world in Spain and in Greece, in Turkey, the world over, have been raising issues on the streets, in camping, in front of government buildings, in order to demand real change and not just wait for the bought-off and sold-out politicians, whether they're, you know, Democratic hacks of the Obama stripe or Republican reactionary troglodytes. You don't wait for the politicians. You don't wait for Don Lane. You don't wait for Micah Posner to do something. The community has to act under these circumstances. We have a caller. You are on free radio with whoever is listening and with me. Hi.
Okay. Hi, this is Colin Campbell Clyde, and I went to the Public Safety Committee meeting, and it was very interesting. We had Bob Lee, District Attorney Larry Bigham, and... what was the other guy's name?
Another public defender guy, I think. Yeah,
the other public defender, and I thought I had his name written down here. Anyhow, the public defenders especially, I thought all three of them gave really good presentations, actually. The public defenders especially really kind of knocked out of the water, and they spoke about the Ken Maffei case, for example, which was the guy who was accused of stealing flowers from the police memorial after the police got shot, and they held him for 18 days. But all then it turned out that he had a receipt in his pocket the whole time because he'd bought flowers to take home to his girlfriend. He'd never committed any crime, but he'd just been kind of profiled because he looked scruffy, and everybody was up in arms after the police had just been shot. And, you know, they brought that up and then compared it to, I guess there was a case, I'm not super familiar with this, but according to them, there's a case in the 1970s where some cops had gone around assaulting and beating up people, and they'd had to go to court for that. And kind of drew comparisons to, like, you know, we could be heading toward that same sort of political climate again. And he specifically said, you know, that was really embarrassing for the city to have to drag those cops through court like that. I hope that y'all don't... choose to go that direction, basically.
Now, let me understand.
So that's one example of what was said.
Colin, whoa, yeah. Colin, hang on a second. Are you talking about the Code Blue cops who were beating up homeless people in Santa Cruz?
I believe so.
Yeah, that was, of course, unfortunately, none of those cops were convicted. And I'm not sure what the, was the point of mentioning this, that they were claiming that the that a climate of fear and hostility towards houseless people is being created that justifies this kind of brutality by police and private citizens? Or were they saying that not enough time is being spent going after crooked and brutal cops because it's all being spent on Ken Maffei type bullshit?
Basically what they were saying is that, you know, kind of a climate of fear and hostility is being ginned up again. That was my interpretation of it.
Okay.
You know, people can and should and are recommended to go and listen to the audio on the city website and judge for themselves, because I'm just giving a secondhand account. But I also really was kind of taken aback, actually, by a lot of what Larry Bigham made a point of. He had a list of, here are the upcoming murder trials. And you can go down the list, and it's somebody who went to Santa Cruz High, it's somebody who went to Harbor High, it's just on down the list. This notion that there's these, like, invasive street people coming from other places because they think that Santa Cruz is a great place to get away with crime is, like, that's not who's doing the murders. Like, that's just not there in the numbers. That's another kind of right-wing talking point that's been ginned up.
And did Bob Lee dispute this, or did he agree, Bob Lee, the district attorney?
He didn't dispute it heavily, no. There was certainly disagreement between the two of them.
On what issues?
There was something in particular, I don't remember right offhand, there's something in particular that Larry Bigham took issue to, but then he never really got to follow up on refuting what Bob Lee said for just kind of the way the meeting went.
How long did each of them get to speak?
It was like a two-hour presentation, and they kind of just traded off for the whole 2 hours and then did a question and answer at the end of it.
This is Bryant's hand-picked body of, I call them bigots, but that probably is unfair to some of the folks there, surely. But I regard the agenda as a bigoted and slanted agenda that is focusing on trying to, I think, slip a jacket around poor and homeless people
what was really remarkable about having the public defenders, like, their role within, you know, their cog in the machine is to be people who look out for the rights of the accused. And that kind of gives them a unique perspective. And I thought it was just this remarkable meeting that ideologically, in a lot of ways, the Public Safety Committee itself had their asses handed to them, because these guys who are handling, like, pretty much the entire caseload of crimes going on in the city and are walking, talking experts on crime rates and, you know, socioeconomic causes of crime and that sort of thing, I think really we're pretty critical of the repressive agenda toward the poor. And you know, said Larry Bigham, his big thing was in investing in the school. Christensen, that was the other guy. And he also talked about volunteering in the schools. He said, school's not prisons, kind of a message. I thought they were really on point, actually.
Well, don't we want to close?
Bob Lee, not so much. Bob Lee, I thought, had some very interesting things to say. But he kept doing stuff like using parental discipline metaphors to describe the criminal justice system, which is it's kind of a verbal game for manipulating people emotionally that doesn't really accurately describe what actually goes on in the criminal justice system. Nobody brought up the fact that there was just this massive hunger strike in the California prisons over the solitary confinement, which is a form of torture, and other conditions that are going on there, that women are being sterilized forcibly in the California prisons. they've set up rival gangs to like get into these gladiator fights that the guards place bets on who's going to win the fight. And I mean, just really horrific stuff is being done to people in the California prisons. And people say, oh, but they're criminals. But yes, does that, you know, does that make it okay
to commit
human rights crimes against them?
Yeah, Colin, what I'm concerned about is the local jail. And I know that we've lost four or five people in the last year or at least around the time of the privatization of the medical services there. Was there any discussion of that at all?
Oh, no, that didn't come up. Are you kidding?
Well, of course, that's...
Why would they want to talk about that?
Well, that's the sheriff, anyway. That's the sheriff and not the DA Bob Lee, for sure.
Get this, Robert. Lynn Robinson, who is, of course, on the city council, was there. And I approached her. What I thought was politely. I have had interactions with her in the past that are a bit more heated. And so I tried to... be as, you know, polite and cordial in my tone and body language as possible. And I told her, Lynn, I find it alarming that the city council is on the brink of passing restrictions on people being able to do art vending downtown, and there's been zero discussion of with the art vendors themselves about the legislation, and that was admitted by Julie Hendy, who's on the city staff. And then I said, Lynn, if this was any other constituency of people, if you were passing a law that was placing restrictions or changing the rules of how downtown businesses could operate, would you do that without having a conversation with downtown business owners?
And her response?
She flat out refused to answer my question.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Yeah.
She had this woman who was, a hanger-on of the power and prestige, which is Lynn Robinson, who kind of jumped in her defense and sort of, like, yipped at me like a little dog, like, yip, 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 and it was all, like, Fox News kind of talking point.
When did you actually talk to her? When did you talk to her? Is this at a break in the meeting or after the meeting?
This was at the end of the meeting.
So you stayed,
we were on our way out.
So you sat through the whole 3 hours of this thing?
2 hours.
Because it normally runs from 6 to 9. They let you out early?
It went to 10, I thought. It was 8 to 10 or something.
It runs from 6.
I'm dyslexic.
Let me know, though. I mean, because you were there for the time when the actual audience of, I shouldn't say the audience, so they shut down the audience. You weren't allowed to say or ask anything, right?
What was really funny was David totally got away with blurting stuff out.
David Silva.
David Silva, yeah, he just kind of stumbles in there as the holy fool from the tarot card and everything, and he can kind of just blurt out things, and nobody's going to tell the Mr. Magoo to shut up, you know? So,
I will.
And in fact, he actually had you're rude.
Of course.
He actually had a back-and-forth interaction with Bob Lee.
And how'd that go? What was that about?
Well, I'm not going to do a spoiler. You should go listen to it right now.
Well, unfortunately, we can't.
Colin,
we can't listen to it. It's not posted. It won't be posted.
It's not posted yet.
No, it won't be posted for a while, at least.
Well, that's the big suspenseful thing, that people will just have to go and listen to the audio and educate themselves about...
Nobody is going to listen to 3 hours of audio to hear 25 seconds of David Silva and Bob Lee.
David Silva.
It ain't gonna happen.
Well, they should listen. Here's the thing: they should listen to audio because a lot of facts were presented about the state of crime as an issue in Santa Cruz, California.
Well,
and,
Colin, you know, what I'd like to see you do, and I think we talked about this at the meeting, is if you could, you know, when that audio is posted, since you know what parts you sat through that crap, since you know what parts are the really relevant parts and the interesting parts, can you section it off and post it on Indie Bay as some limited audio files that will give people the meat of things?
Yeah, I can run it through the editing box for sure.
I hope so. I know, and I know you're very generous, and when you offer to do it, and I realize you're struggling to survive in your own way in terms of even find housing.
Well, money always helps, man.
Yeah. Well, we send your contributions to Colin Campbell Clyde.
So, thank you. I'm trying to launch a movie company here.
Indeed.
I do a lot of things.
We'll get to the commercial part of this in a minute.
Restore the Fourth.
Yes.
I have to say that right now. The new chapter of Restore the Fourth, which is as in the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America.
Slow down. I want to get back to the task force
okay.
stuff. And that stuff is, I wanted to say that...
Look for her on Facebook.
You're on Colin Campbell Clyde is on Facebook, and I really appreciate.
Look for Restore the Fourth Santa
okay.
Santa Cruz on Facebook.
Right,
you spell out the word fourth.
Okay, restore the
F-O-U-R-T-H. F-O-U-R-T-H, that's right.
Yeah, so that, I might actually do that at some point, particularly if somebody reminds me. But we're talking about a task force meeting with Colin that you went to last night. It's going to be happening usually every other Wednesday, but throughout October there's going to be weekly meetings of the task force in order to turn out some kind of series of resolutions, God help us.
Boy, are they a hoot. I mean, if you're going to go to any kind of public meeting, man, check these out. I mean, it's really where the fireworks happen, compared to, city council or whatever.
Right. The audience was not allowed to speak at this, right? The audience had other than the holy fool outburst from people like David Silva, they did not give you any public comment period, correct?
I have actually had Jim West, who's the cop that is on the panel, got right up in my face at a previous meeting, and there's no public comment at this, because I wasn't even trying to do public, I was just trying to engage them in conversations during a break, but they didn't like what I had to say. They were offended by the word underclass, and he gave me this look like he'd never heard it before. Like underclass, it's a sociological term. Yeah, look it up. Okay, great. Buddy.
You should bring a sign to the next meeting. The underclass is here. Get used to it, or something like that.
Totally right.
Let me get back to you here on this other issue. There was questions from the group of the DA and the two public defender. Business guys. I mean, public defenders, frankly, I call them public pretenders because they plea bargain out 95, if not more, percent of their cases, which if they actually took them to trial, it would stop a lot of this shit because the city could not afford, the county and the state could not afford all these drug trials, particularly the drug war trials, but also other stupid trials having to do with trespass and things that impact low-income people. But they don't do that. Instead, they will quick do their 5 minutes in the hallway shit, and away you go. So I'm not terribly happy with the public defender's office, however lofty what they say is.
Speaking of the drug war, there was someone who spoke there who is kind of the main DA's office person in charge of narcotics. He's the narcotics office person.
This was at the meeting today, yesterday?
This is the meeting yesterday, yeah.
Okay.
That guy was a true believer drug warrior. Like, he is just fighting the drug war, and that's his thing. So
again, my question to you is, what kinds of questions did they ask? What kind of dialogue happened between Bryant's handpicked committee and these three highly paid attorneys who are sitting around pretending to address the rights of people either as prosecutors or as defenders?
Let's just say that they didn't ask any questions that were particularly inspired. They wanted to know about this... a population of repeat offenders. That's their big, the repeat offenders is questions about that came up. It wasn't anything, particularly enlightening as far as
I'm just wondering, what did it show about the actual group of people asking the questions? Did it show a bias of any kind? I mean, I'm characterizing them as a bunch of bigots often, and I want to make sure I'm not, you know, doing them wrong. What was your impression based upon the questions of where this group, this committee was coming from, this Bryant-selected task force?
I think there's definitely a lock-em-up attitude going on there.
And are we talking about lock them up for violent crimes, or were they talking mainly about, you know, sleeping outside or using marijuana or using hard drugs, anything like, or using a needle, you know, that sort of thing?
Definitely an emphasis on drugs and drug war type policies. You know, a few ex cops. There's one woman is a school teacher. Reina Ruiz from the Beach Flats.
He's
Community
the chair.
Center.
He's not from the Beach Flats. Well, I guess there's, yeah, she's there, but the chair is the Beach Boardwalk guy, is a Seaside Company man. And
right.
The vice chair is Jim
right.
Howe, the former police officer.
Yeah, so you get, people from the commercial sector, cops, like at least one person who's kind of a token social worker, and a few people who just kind of seem like they're there probably because they are friends with Hillary Bryant.
Hmm.
It seems like the main criteria for them being there.
How about the audience? How big was the audience in which you were?
The audience, you know, the audience was mixed. The audience had people who, you know, you might describe as leftist, for lack of a better word, and you know, people. Rick Martinez, the police, was he a captain? Or a sergeant or something like that was there. I don't know his rank.
Deputy chief or something, I think.
Yeah, right, right. Lynn Robinson from the city council. Deborah from
Elston
Neighbors.
Yep.
Elston, that's right. And
was the audience filled up or was it mostly empty? Was there much turnout for this?
It was... they had about three rows of chairs. And the chairs were packed.
Three rows. So three rows of chairs. You say about 20 or 30 people?
The meager space that they had left for the audience, because most of the space was taken up by the boardroom tables of the panel.
Uh-huh.
And something that I thought was interesting, when I went in there before, you walked in and the tables were in a U shape.
Right.
So that the... And this time, they were in a hoop or a full closed circle, so you're looking at people who have their back to you, and I thought that was kind of symbolic that change. Like it felt so very sort of like exclusionary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that we don't even have to face the people in the audience or really acknowledge that they're there.
Did you get any sense?
They're just there to be spectators.
Did you get any sense after by talking to other members of the audience afterward of how they regarded the proceedings?
At the end of the day, I immediately launched into an argument with Lynn Robinson and her little lackey. Person.
And a number of people then suddenly started shouting, "Go, Colin, go!" Right? Or "Get out, Colin, get out!"
They came out of the woodwork. Yeah, actually, Batman came and saved me. It was amazing. You should see it.
Interesting.
It was
a costume crusade.
Yeah.
Right? All right. Well,
that's
we've been talking
right.
with Colin Campbell Clyde, who has his own show on the Magic Box, which is what's happening with the Magic Box.
The Magic Box is. Coming back really soon. There's videos that I shot just recently that, London Laidlaw does the ostrich egg omelets from Octagon 8, which is a wonderful literary work of science fiction poetry. And so that's going to go up on the channel soon. Getting out there, shooting more video. There's some videos in the editing box that are, you know, partway through the process of being edited, and things are moving. And so, yeah, over the next few weeks, Magic Box Radio Show.
And how do we find Magic Box?
Oh, well, you go to YouTube and you search for Magic Box Santa Cruz. Those are the four magic words. Magic Box Santa Cruz, it'll come right up.
Now, will you be going to this protest on Sunday that some ne'er-do-wells are doing downtown in front of Forever 21 at 1:30?
Oh, yeah, I'm totally going to be there. I think that the city council is kind of overreaching on this one, and that there's more community support for people doing things like putting out blankets and selling beautiful artwork, receiving money from tourists that they then go and spend at local businesses instead of the money going back to Europe or China or wherever they came from. I think that a lot of people in town, that's why they like to go to Santa Cruz, because it's not Carmel, it's not Capitola, it's not Monterey, it's Santa Cruz. And you know, it's a little bit freaky, and people do creative stuff. And I think that the street vendors add value to downtown. They make it more vibrant and enjoyable. Heck, they're even an extra set of eyes in case some ruffian wanted to commit a crime. You know what I'm saying? That makes for a crime-free zone wherever somebody puts a blanket up, because why would a street vendor want to let somebody, you know, do a bunch of muggings in front of their street blanket or something? There's all kinds of benefits to it, and I feel like it's really short-sighted for the city. City powers that be, the people in the city government, to try to get a few last gasps out of their political careers by whipping up animosity between different groups of people in town. It's insane that the businesses are in conflict with the street vendors when they should all be working together to improve the economy for everybody.
I don't know if they are. I think this is something that is engineered by a smaller group. But I should also point out that we're going to be having an organizational meeting on Saturday, day after tomorrow, at 5 o'clock to help make some more signs and maybe scheme out various things. Like, I think there may be a tour of shame planned and some kind of delineating the different vending pens and art pens that are going to be the only remaining space left, very small patches of space on Pacific Avenue that remain after this decimation of the public space. That'll be happening at 5 o'clock on Saturday. You likely to be there for that thingy, or are you going to be at the Magic Box somewhere, or somewhere else, perhaps?
Well, the Magic Box can appear spontaneously anywhere in the universe at any given moment.
In any case, I hope to see you, and I hope to see
that's
people.
Just how it works. That's the mechanics of it. It's like
sure.
The TARDIS. You know what TARDIS stands for? Do you, Robert?
I do not, but I do know that I hope to see you there on Saturday, I imagine I'll see you on Sunday, and then, of course, Tuesday at City Council at 3 o'clock is when, or shortly thereafter, is when the item will come up again on the agenda for the rubber stamping by the City Council. So,
this is all true. TARDIS stands for Time and Relative Dimensions in Space,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like a police box because its chameleon circuit is broken. But people should go to city council meetings and get involved in city politics, get charged. Like, we're doing well, I think. The people who are opposed to this bullshit, like, I think we're on the verge of a real groundswell of opposition. And you got Janet Napolitano in charge of the UC system, so that's going to get the college students all riled up. And if we can build a big coalition of college students and homeless people and middle-class people who are advocates for the poor and for human rights and against all the wars and all of that, I think some big things are on their way in this town.
Hear, hear. Thank you, Colin, and call in again if you'd like.
Okay, thanks.
All right, man. That was Colin Campbell. Clyde, you're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norse. We have 45 minutes left in Bathrobs Pierre's Broadside, the name of my show. You're invited to call in 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. This is a live show, and it's being broadcast on Thursday, September 19th, in case you wondered if you were listening to a replay or rebroadcast. Please do call in, 427-3772. And until you do, I'm going to be playing a little more of street interviews and chatting and commenting on them. Let's get back to the interviews at the Red Church last Monday. Again, a place where you can go to meet people, get a bite to eat, and kind of get a put your finger on the pulse of what's going on to some extent, or feel the strangulation as the fingers of authority finger you.
Puppy.
This is another incident, yeah. Perhaps.
I'm 20 years old. You know, I'm a young man, and I don't really look like I'm homeless. But I was sitting at the boardwalk with my puppy, and I was sitting on a bench. And I was sitting on it backwards, I had my feet hanging out the back of it, and the cops stopped and harassed me, and they gave me a ticket for sitting on a bench backwards.
Sitting on a bench backwards?
Yeah.
Now, that's going to add uncivilized behavior to our local society.
They said it was doing something other than sitting on a bench. They pretty much called me a piece of shit, told me to get the fuck out of town, I didn't belong here, and told me if I came back down to the boardwalk at all during the rest of the week, that they'd arrest me and take my puppy from me.
The name of your puppy?
What?
The name of your puppy?
Soldier.
And what was your response to this?
I had to do exactly what they said. They were harassing me. They tried to grab my stuff from me, and I said, please don't do that. And they said if I fucking said something again, and they were going to arrest me right there, that I should know what they're fucking doing. And it took them 20 minutes to sit there and figure out what they were going to give me. Four officers, 20 minutes. They changed the ticket three times.
And do you remember what they initially told you was your charge and then what they changed it to?
They said that I was sitting on a bench backwards, and they had to figure out exactly what law
could be applied to get rid of your kind downtown.
During
the boardwalk.
During all this, a lady walked by smoking a cigarette on the boardwalk, and he just said, please put that out, ma'am.
She didn't say, you're smoking a cigarette inappropriately, arrest her, or get out of town, you piece of shit. Nothing like that was mentioned. Was this an upper middle class type person?
It was four officers that were doing that.
Right, but the individual with the cigarette.
It was a younger lady.
She didn't have a backpack, I suppose.
She didn't look homeless at all. She looked like a tourist.
You had your backpack with you?
I had my backpack, and I was feeding my dog, yeah.
What was the reaction of the people passing by? Did they stop to observe? Did they veer away?
They all watched, and then when the cops left, they were like, oh, what were they messing with you for? And they were like, oh, yeah, that's messed up, but they didn't do anything to help.
Now, did you leave, or did you stay on the bench?
I left. I had to.
And where did you go then?
Wherever else I could go.
And have you had any subsequent interactions with our fine police department?
Yeah, everywhere I go, I'm kicked out because I have an animal, but yet they're supposed to be allowed in every building on Pacific.
Is your animal a service animal?
Yes, it is.
And what function does it provide?
For emotional support.
Remember, you do not have to answer that kind of a question. Yeah. You say, I'm not required to provide you with evidence of what my animal does.
If I don't answer the questions, they arrest me.
Emotional support unit for this man's emotional.
We understand, and I'm suggesting agreed, and I'm suggesting we agree with people. Don't you don't have to go into the details of what it's for.
Oh, no.
You have a right to do that. But it is true. You know, standing up for yourself can result in the threat of arrest. Often it's the threat rather than the resolution, but it can be a real arrest. Doesn't mean the arrest will lead to any kind of conviction, but you have to be maybe in bologna sandwiches and having to wait three or four days to get your stuff back from the police station if they give it back to you?
Oh, yeah, my friend just got arrested for some stuff that really he should have been arrested for, but he had three laptop computers that he bought with his school money, and he went back to get them. They're gone. They have no idea. No record of them. They're trying to tell him that there's not even a name associated with the property, but yet they know they can pull the property up when they put a name in. The property comes up, so there's obviously a name associated with it. It's $2,000 in school money that's just gone because the police department doesn't know how to do their job.
Is he here at this...
He's not here.
No.
Doran.
And your name is?
Champion.
A champion. So, any other specific incidents recently that have happened to you that you want to comment on?
No, that was just the biggest one. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Be on Free Radio probably on Thursday night. So, Faustus, you... Were you present at this, shall we say, attempt to enforce public safety on the around the Red Church by getting rid of these ominous women?
No, but I've heard it.
And reminding you, this apparently, Faustus was talking about his account of he had heard that police showed up in significant numbers to roust sleeping elderly and women out at the Red Church sometime in the last week or two. Sorry about that. In the last week or two, and this is a sort of a has been a sleeping spot for people right outside the church because they are sort of huddling, looking for some kind of security, some kind of safety against the depredations of the police department, the Parks and Rec Rangers, the First Alarm security thugs that are now graduating into Parks and Rec Rangerhood.
From several different sources, so it's pretty reliable. I mean, it is reliable. I'm sure that this is what happened.
And you also mentioned a new sparkling paddy wagon, to use a phrase that I've heard police criticize me for using, suggesting it discriminates against folks of Irish ancestry.
Oh, really? Well, no, I don't think so. I think paddy is like padlock or something like that. But it could be. A lot of cops are Irish anyway. Used to be Irish, but no more. But that was a particular... I was particularly appalled by hearing that last person's description of how the police use a small dog and essentially threatening to take the dog hostage or to put it in the pounder or kill it or whatever they're going to do with it.
Give it a better home, perhaps.
Yeah. Just to turn the screws on this young guy.
Champion, you're talking.
Yeah, Champion.
My conversation.
Anyway.
So, but anything about this vehicle? You say it's been new to you.
It's a paddy wagon.
You haven't seen that before.
It's a van. It's a Ford van, painted black and white in Santa Cruz Police Department colors, and it has a secured, locked up place in the back where they'll go down the street up and down, and if you're just sleeping, they'll give you a ticket. But if you have a warrant, they'll take you and they'll lock you in the paddy wagon and take you to wherever they take you, you know, the Dream Inn or whatever.
Probably not. No.
No. So that's the deal with the paddy wagon.
Dig it. We've been talking with
Faustus.
Hey, Faustus. So we're talking with the medical marijuana grower,
Randy Reverdy.
And Randy, you say that you're concerned. You came up to me to mention ask if I'd heard about the seizure by, I guess, whether it's deputies or Santa Cruz Police or Rangers.
Santa Cruz Police Department.
Of
Santa Cruz.
A harvest of marijuana plants.
Yeah, it was 98 plants. The police exaggerated and said it was hundreds of plants. It wasn't. We had cards, 5 cards. It was on their property, someone else's property.
5 cards, medical marijuana cards, I think is what he was talking about.
They didn't even know, the people that owned it didn't even know until the day they walked down and saw us. And
did they call the police? Did they accuse
you? No, I went and talked to them. Me and my son walked them home that day, and they were actually pretty good with it. The police knew the whole entire time that the plants were there. They were there the day we planted them. So they lied about that in the paper. And they lied about us detouring the river, which we never did. They lied to the public by saying that they just happened to cross them when they knew they were there for 148 days.
Well, maybe they wanted to wait for the plants to mature so as to provide a sort of a opportunity fund for the police department.
Yeah, because that's when they hit it, when they were budding.
And have you sought to get those plants returned and presented your medical marijuana cards to the police department?
What I understand is that the plants are gone, but we had 48 plants in buckets and pots, and they could have asked us to move those. Everybody had cards. It was all medical. They said that they couldn't arrest anybody because there were so many people. There were names on every plant for medical people. They were their plants. People in wheelchairs, walkers, canes, crutches, whatever. You know, they had their names on them. I mean, come on. If they wanted to arrest somebody, all I had to do is look at the tag, and there's a person that they could have arrested because the plant had a name on it. Every one of them. And there were all together 98 plants. That's, and they were all 12 feet tall. They were huge.
And what kind of medical conditions did the people who were growing these plants have?
What kind of medical conditions did the people have?
Who were using the marijuana from the plants?
Wheelchairs, crutches, paraplegics. They were for anybody who had a medical condition that had a card.
And give me an example of some of the medical conditions that people had that you know of, if you know of any.
I don't understand.
In other words, was it arthritis? Was it cancer?
Yeah,
was it
all those, everything. Cancer, arthritis, car wrecks, falling out of trees. Anybody who had a medical card could be a part of this. But I grew for certain people that already had cards. You know, they were helping me finance the grow so they could get their marijuana for that whole year. I mean, this didn't hurt me at all. What it did is it hurt the medical community for marijuana.
Now, did you take this story to J.M. Brown or whatever clown did the story at the Sentinel?
Well, they wouldn't talk to me at all. Waited outside the door of the Sentinel for 16 hours and asked every single person their name to tell them my side of the story, because they only told one side of the story. The police lied about every single thing in the paper. Mm-hmm. Every single thing that was said in the paper and on the news for 5 weeks was all a lie.
You have access to a computer yourself?
No, I don't.
Because
I don't even have a phone.
If you want to write a letter, I will sign it and turn it in. Or if you'd like to go down to the, I guess, not that I have much hope in these publications, but the Metro or the Good Times, and talk to them. I'll walk in there with you.
Somebody else that, you know, why? Yeah. Why is it only one-sided? How come that journalist didn't come and ask anybody?
Well, we don't want your kind around
here.
Well,
see, what they did was, is they came into our camp where 50 people lived, right?
Right.
And they completely destroyed it. And then they took pictures and said, this is how we live.
Well, otherwise, how could they justify what they do?
We had a fire. A week before that, we had a fire that arsonists started, right? I've talked to both people that were arrested. Neither one were arrested for arson. What did they arrest them for? Why were they in jail?
And did you find that out?
No, I haven't found that out
yet. Have they been released?
One has. The other one's still doing time.
You can call the sheriff's office and ask what the charge of the individual is, and they'll usually give it to you.
Unless it's for arson, I don't want to hear it, because that's what they said to us.
Thank you.
Understand what I'm saying?
I do.
That's what they told them.
Actually, I don't, and I was kind of distracted. This sounds like an interesting aspect to the Randy Roberti's story. Let's hear a little more. I don't think that point is clarified, though.
Public out here, all the public, as far as anything knows, the public knows only what the police wrote, gave the information
for sure
to the Sentinel, right?
What was the date of this incident? Do you remember?
It's been exactly a month,
and that,
on Wednesday.
So today is the 16th, so it was the 16th of August?
It was a Wednesday, so whatever that Wednesday fell on.
Right, okay.
They woke us up with machine guns.
You mean by?
The SWAT team.
They poked you with their machine guns?
Yeah, they woke me up with it right in my face.
And what time did this happen?
Like 9 o'clock in the morning.
And do you remember the names of any of the officers involved?
Yeah, Hoppy, Annoy, Baker. I know them all. Every cop. I could name
off a few more that were involved in this raid.
Because
I will confront them when I see them.
Medina. You have to ask for some other people, too. There's like 8 people that live there. My son's right there. He was there. He can tell you the same thing. There's all kinds of people. There was probably 50 people who lived on the property. The people that owned the property, when they came down the very first time and saw us, they didn't even know we were there until the day they saw us.
How long had you lived there?
A year.
And so they just didn't visit the property very frequently?
No, not very frequently. But when they finally did come and visit it, we had already been there a year, and they didn't even know we were there. That's.
Did they object to your being there?
No, they never said anything about
being... Have you gone back there?
No, I didn't think it would be a good idea to go back and confront them in any way because I thought they would take that as a hostile move.
Have others returned to the property that you know of?
Nobody's returned back to the property. The cops now will give us tickets and haul us to jail and for trespassing. They trespassed on property to get to us. You know,
If it's the police department, we think of it as privilege rather than...
Well, the sheriffs found us first, and they told us that what we were doing was a great thing for the medical community and to carry on. And the police said that all the way up to the day they pulled them.
Did you subsequently talk to any sheriff?
They shook their hands and told us congratulations, and you're doing a great service for us.
Did you talk to any sheriffs about this?
None of them will talk. I can't even find an attorney that will talk to me about it so I could fight the case. I've called all the way to Idaho.
Now,
I've called the paralegal department. I've called everywhere, you know, just looking for a hungry attorney to... I don't know what to do.
Would you like to come on the radio in person and talk about this?
Maybe.
In the meantime, I'll play this on Thursday evening if you wish.
Yeah, that'd be great. The public actually needs to know that what the police said in their paper is all lies. Every single thing. Not one thing that they said was the truth. They said we had hundreds of plants. We only had 98 plants. We kept it that way on purpose. We had 5 cards. Each of us could have grown 100 plants. That would have been 500 plants. But we kept it under 100 on purpose. You know, we didn't know how it was going to work out with the people that own the property or if we were going to get away with it, you know. But when they asked us the very first time they came who had cards, everybody raised their hands and they walked away and said, good job. Now, how can you go from good job to sticking machine guns in our faces and telling us you have a half hour to move?
Did you find a legal place to go after that?
No.
So now you are still sort of...
Now we're sleeping in the doorways of Santa Cruz because, well, look at it this way. When we first got there, the police told us that it was a great place for us to be. They knew where we all were.
The place where you were originally driven away from.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, you know, what they did was an injustice to a lot of people. Not only 50 people who lived there permanently, but the medical community lost out.
Talking to Valerie Corral of Wham or anything?
I don't know who Valerie Corral is, and the Wham people, I don't know.
Did you speak with any of them? Or?
No, I didn't
and
know I could.
How can people reach you if they want to talk to you?
I'm at River Street Shelter every day at 4 o'clock to eat, and every Monday here.
And again, your full name is?
Randy Walter Roberti.
And spell it, could you?
R-O-B-E-R-T-I, Roberti.
Got a phone or an email?
No, I can't afford that. I put my whole life savings into this again, you know. This is the second year in a row they've gotten me. If anybody has any property that I can grow on, let me know. I'll do you a great service.
So, Randy, is it?
Yes.
So, if anybody wants to get in touch with Randy, please leave a message on the Huff line, 423-4833. I will pass it on to you if I see you again.
If my son will talk to you, you can ask him any of the questions you just asked me. I'm pretty sure you're going to get the same answers.
Okay, you want to introduce me to him?
Yeah. Pick him.
So, Lawrence, you're Randy's son. You confirmed this earlier when you spoke to us about this raid a month ago. Any thoughts about what's happened since then?
The officers right now are physically taking people out of the woodworks, out of the Poconips. They're trying to do whatever they can, even, sorry to say.
4 miles out of city limits to come and fuck with us.
Say that again?
They came 4 miles out of city limits to mess with us.
Very dutiful officers.
Very beautiful. I mean, they're doing, I guess, if we were in town, I could see them doing their job. But we're not even in the city limits. We're outside the city limits. And like I said, the people that own the property didn't even know we were there. We were there for a year.
Do you know the names of the owners of the property?
No, I don't.
Lawrence, do you know the names of the property owners?
No, he doesn't.
My other son Kevin does.
And perhaps we get the word from your other son, Kevin.
I'll get Kevin to come and talk to you.
Yeah, I'll give you my card here. You're a native yourself?
Yes, I was born here. My family's been here for 270 years, right here in Santa Cruz.
How long have you been homeless?
About 30 years. My wife died in a car accident, and this is where I ended up after my nervous breakdown. And then Saturday morning, I wake up, and both my puppies are gone, and someone stole my dogs.
This is recent.
Yeah, Saturday morning.
Sorry to hear it, man. Names of your puppies are?
Luna and Mr. Mister.
If I hear of any dogs of that name?
One's solid black with white socks, and the other one's all white with a diamond on his forehead. That's Luna, and Mr. Mister's one with socks.
And we've been talking with?
Hmm?
Again, we've been talking with?
Randy Roberti.
And that's quite a story. I'll be trying to check up on some of this when I next go back to the Red Church. There's some questions I would, you know, that I would raise in the story. You obviously, if one were to really research this further, you'd have to check on a number of things. If I see these officers and I haven't seen them downtown, they're not really on the regular downtown beat. I would ask them what's going on. I think I've always thought it would be great if people like Valerie Carrillo actually stood up for independent growers like this, but as far as I know, she never has, at least not in any public way, just for her own little coterie and group. She didn't support Greenway's application. She didn't oppose the restriction of medical marijuana clubs in Santa Cruz, the moratorium, and then the ban on all clubs other than the two and now one that's open. She didn't stand up, as far as I know, and support the attempt of the of another marijuana distribution center to come in the Harvey West, which was opposed by the Take Back Santa Cruz mob, or activists, if you will. And so, you know, I suppose, you know, it's an undue amount of energy attacking the ACLU and the NAACP and the Santa Cruz Coalition Against Racism and all these groups that claim to be so deeply involved in issues but take no action on the local violations. Although I think that really it's important to expose the hypocrisy and the inaction, mainly because you want to change that, not necessarily through those groups because they're pretty dead in the water, but not to let people not be misled that there are groups that are actually covering this. Just as Santa Cruz maintains this illusion that it's a liberal town, while the city council is essentially consigning street performers, street vendors, street artists to the trash can, or out of town, or somewhere else, or to the small pens and caged areas that they're leaving as kind of, I guess they called them demonstration villages in the USSR when the USSR was around. They're phony little camps that look like that let people who are looking in think everything is well. Potopkin villages, I think they call them. I don't know if I have that correct. In any case, it's that's not good. Frankly, I hear so much of this, I become kind of inured and hardened to it. But it's still. It still bothers me, and that's why I keep doing the show. Let's hear some more from last Monday, the 16th of September, I guess. Today's the 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th.
Hey, what's going on?
It's all right.
Not going to talk about it. Why bother? I'm hanging after all. It happens all the time.
Yeah,
I hear you. We're talking with a man who thinks that these laws are stupid. He's anonymous, perhaps? You don't have to say anything if you don't want to. Okay, well, wait. You say you disagree with what they're doing?
I disagree with everything they're doing, yeah.
Are you an old-timer here, a long-time person?
30 years.
And yet, are you in line here to eat because you're hungry and without means, or are you just mingling with the lower classes?
No job without means.
Here you. How long has that been the case?
About a year and a half.
And are you sleeping outside illegally?
Out in the bushes, yeah.
And have you been hassled by police for doing
that? On occasion, but rarely.
Is that because of your special relationship with the police chief? Or?
No, not at all. Because I just get in a good place.
And you wish to expose your identity and give your social security number?
Give it to the New World Order.
Or do you want to say your first name?
Joe.
Thank you. Well, your pooch died a year ago.
No.
What's his name? What's his, no? Well, we'll leave that one. It's the hardest thing, you say, that came up for you.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
it should be a rather interesting day.
So you're saying that John Hyatt is coming to Forever 21. When is that?
Well, yeah, with the Goners.
When is that?
During the protest.
Oh, I don't know who John Hyatt is, so...
Great songwriter, and since he is a Goner, it's kind of like the Vendors. They're Goners, too.
What's a Goner, other than the city council?
It's his band. He wrote Memphis in the Morning. He's an excellent songwriter.
I think the listeners will hear that. You were drowned out from my ears by this fine music. Yes. Yeah, and we've been talking with
St. X.
Thank you, St. X. Actually, it was a false report. We're talking with a man with a very colorful T-shirt. What's your name?
Raymond.
And Raymond, you say you had a, should we say?
Oh, I have video.
You had a video of someone who actually assaulted you.
I have video
beach
of
beach boardwalk guy.
Yeah, at my company Christmas party.
And what happened?
I was dancing, and next thing you know, they tackled me and took me to the ground and threw me in jail.
They didn't like your Grateful Dead T-shirt?
I was wearing a Brazilian jersey. Actually.
Ah, Brazil, perhaps not an unpopular country with the...
I don't know about that, but hey.
So what did they claim was the pretext, or did they?
They never did.
Did your friends at the party support you?
Yeah, they filmed me and were like, yeah, why are you doing to that?
Name of the security guards who attacked you?
I do not know those names.
How many were there?
Four.
And this happened when?
December 7th, 2012.
And have you got the video posted for YouTube?
No, I don't have it on YouTube. I have it on my email.
You can send it
my
to...
my Yahoo account.
Send it to me if you want to post it. I think it'll be good. But, you know, again, if you're trying to...
Seriously, yeah, because I was wrong. For
you
sure.
You passed the 6 months. I don't know if it's 6 months or a year. I'm not sure what the... I think it's 6 months for a state suit and a year or 2 years for a federal lawsuit. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I tried to go through John Burris.
Oh, he didn't like it?
They said I should have went to hospital.
Yeah, it's always good to do that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they said. If I went to hospital, they would have picked me up.
So switching to slow speed.
And we're going to remedy that.
Again, we've been talking with
Raymond.
And Raymond, anything you want to add about this? Have you been able to go back to the boardwalk?
You know, all these new little enactments that they've been doing with an hour sitting at a bench and such down at the beach is kind of ludicrous, and you know how that is because you've been around a long time. I've known you for a long time.
How long have you been around?
I've lived here 49 years.
Wow. You've seen some changes.
Yeah, I've went through the shake and the quake and everything.
How long have you been houseless yourself, or are you houseless?
I'm not houseless, no. I have a home. But
you're here to save a little money
I'm
or to
working
sample the fine cuisine?
I'm working the fine cuisine. That's exactly what it is.
We're here. Well, Raymond, thank you. Anything you want to add? Be coming to the protest on Sunday at 1:30 in front of Forever 21.
Chris with the guitar thing and such. Yeah. Like, you can't set your stuff down, Michelle. I don't know if I'll make it down to that, but I agree with what you guys are doing to demonstrate against what, I mean, basically it's discretionary, ludicrous kind of enactment of laws that are really not helping anybody.
But they are such a nice aesthetic appeal to those who want to run off the riffraff, don't you think?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Raymond. Any comments?
No, what you guys were talking about?
About?
Well, we were using big words.
Anti-homeless stuff that's going on.
Well, I got a ticket for camping in my truck.
How long ago?
Oh, I'm a vet, and they gave it to me on 9/11.
This year?
Yeah, just a few days ago.
What were the circumstances?
Oh, I was just parked, and I nodded out, and
what time of day or night was it?
Oh, about 2 in the morning.
And where were you?
Oh, I was around West Cliff, over around in front of the, where the restrooms are, over at the, Lighthouse Field around there.
And are the restrooms open at night or closed?
Prepare your...
Oh, they close when they close the park. This was across the street in one of the...
Were others also in vehicles nearby or just...
I think that some other person got a ticket too. Somebody else got a ticket there that...
I suggest you go to the homeless lack of shelter center or the homeless service center, as they call themselves, and get on their waiting list to go into shelter, even though you won't get in and you don't want to go in probably. But once you're on that list, they will dismiss citations for camping.
And
also ask them to write you a letter that says the shelter was full the night you got a ticket.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Talking with?
Antonio.
Thank you, Tony. Any street reports other than what you already told me? Thank you.
How are you?
Say it again.
Sleep deprived.
Indeed. Okay.
Numerous account of police arresting homeless people.
For sure. What have you noticed? Or experienced?
Exactly what I said, police arresting homeless people.
We're
just people of authority in general deciding that homeless people are of a second-class citizenship and they don't deserve services or even in a convenience store.
We're talking with
Baba.
And have you experienced this yourself recently?
Yes, as of today, Trader Joe's told us our business wasn't appreciated there because we were homeless, and homeless people are known to buy alcohol and disrupt their flow of business in their parking lot, apparently.
Oh, so house people are also known to buy alcohol.
Yeah, of course, but that was their case.
And what time did this happen?
Around noon today.
Were you trying to purchase and told you couldn't purchase?
Yeah, well, they told us that our business was, they told us to not even come in the store. They told us to leave.
And how many of you were there?
Two of us.
And two men and a woman?
Me and another gentleman.
Come to the protest on Sunday and talk about that. You know about the protest coming up?
I'm not sure I'll be in town for that, Robert, but I'll see if I am.
Thank you. We've been talking with?
Baba.
Thank you, Baba. Talking with?
Malise.
Or whatever, a host or a business? Or.
A business, the Dominican Hospital.
Tell me about it.
I was seen once a couple weeks ago, and I was left alone and not bothered at all. My little son was as well, but my middle-aged son, or my teenage son, went to be seen, and they frisked him in the middle of doubled-over pain for an appendicitis. They frisked him for knives and weapons when they found out that his address was Coral Street. Otherwise, before, I listed my address and my younger son's address as a different street address because I didn't want the hassle, and then when I actually gave him the real address for my teenager, they frisked him. They felt him all up and down, and he's 14, and he was in the middle of pain, and they actually pushed in on his area where he was in pain at, and it further made him more in pain.
Did they provide him with services afterward or not?
Yeah, they provided him services, but I even asked him, I said, is that necessary? And they said, yes, we do this to everyone that comes in the door. But I said, you never did that to me a week ago or my youngest son, so I know that it was because of that.
Name of the doctor or individuals who did that, did you know?
I really don't know the ER doc's name, or the security guard, I should say. It was Dominican, the ER.
And when did this happen?
This happened approximately, it was exactly two Sundays ago, exactly.
So that would be, today is the 16th, the 15th, be September 1st or so?
Yes, it was.
September 1st or 2nd, something like
it
that.
Was.
And your name is?
Malise Levesque.
And how do you spell that?
M-E-L-I-S-E-L-A-V-E-C-K.
And do you mind if I play this on free radio?
You can definitely do that.
If you'd like to come to the radio station and actually talk about it personally, I'll give you a card. You can come. It's Thursday evenings and Sunday mornings. Or you can come to the Huff meeting on Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe, and I'll give you that, too.
You can do anything that you put in front of me, I'll do it.
Okay.
It was very
humiliating
and very
abusive.
It was very inappropriate. My son felt just very violated.
How many children do you have?
Four.
And how old are you?
I'm 35.
And you look about 12.
Thanks.
Again, we've been talking with...
I'm sorry. Malise.
Thanks, Malise.
I know. You, let's see, I'll just say that, you know, the government does this wrong. They cut out the red church where you can live at once in a while. You know, it's because of a couple bad apples, and you shouldn't reject everybody just because of a couple bad apples.
So how has the red church cut you off?
They won't even let us sleep in the cubby holes here no more.
And when did that change happen?
Just about a couple weeks ago.
And you've been a relatively frequent sleeper yourself?
Oh, yeah, you know, I've been there 17 years sleeping out here, you know, and right here, you know, and all of a sudden, man, like about every 5 years, they cut us out.
And did you talk to Father Joel Miller about that?
Oh, no, I haven't talked to nobody except you.
You might want to mention it to him.
Those of us that really, you know, respect the place. And everybody else, you know, came here and, you know, it got stupid, you know, but we don't. You know, why crucify us?
So what are you doing now that you're elsewhere?
Just find a cubby hole wherever I can find one.
And we've been talking with?
Brad.
Thanks, Brad. Any reports from the street?
I wish they had more jobs. I've been filling out applications all week, and I'm having no luck.
What kind of work are you looking for?
Anything that can be done. You know,
I've tried the job center on 7th.
Yeah, they can only take so many people. You know, there's only so many jobs, and there's a lot of people out there. I can understand that there's going to be homeless everywhere. You know, I hate to be one of them. It's sad. I came here on a walkabout hoping that, you know, I could, you know, settle down here, get a job, find a place, start a life.
And your name is?
My name is Red.
Hey, Red. How long you been here?
About a week.
And are you planning to stay, or are you going to move on?
I don't know. It depends on whether or not I find a job. Because I don't want to be homeless forever. And I got a whole journey ahead of me.
You've been hassled by police or not?
Once, but that was a misunderstanding on my part. I was in the wrong spot, you know, but the cops around here are fairly decent, you know. I've met some pretty corrupt cops, and I'm glad that there's some pretty good ones around here.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Red.
Thanks, Red. This is getting whacked. Just what do you mean by that, sir?
Just getting whacked, man. This is supposed to be liberal freedom. This is ridiculous. I'm from the Bible Belt, and there's more freedom down there than anywhere in this city.
Now, give me an example of this whacking you mentioned.
Just everything. I'm pretty sure the next law will be if you can't afford housing here, then you can't be here. It's just illegal to be vagrant here.
I think they're really telling you in one way or another, but
I'm sure they want to pass that.
Have you been approached by police or authorities in the last week in any way? Keeping a low profile?
Yeah, and just staying out of trouble. But I see it all around me, you know. I'm not personally really harassed very much because I guess I'm an old geezer, but I see it all around me, and it's just wild.
What's the most latest thing you've seen that's disturbed you?
First alarm guys walking around in places that are far beyond their property or jurisdiction and just walking around acting like cops, like volunteer cops, basically.
For your own safety, son.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right. We've been talking with?
James.
Thanks, James. Well, what's your comment now? Say that again.
It's all going to shit.
In what way is it going to poo-poo?
Homeless people are getting discriminated against.
In what way, for heaven's sake? Be more specific.
Laws that are prolific.
Don't use these $10 words. What are you talking about? Give me the truth here. What's been happening to you?
Being singled out as a street kid among other people that are doing the exact same thing that I'm doing.
For example?
A bunch of homeless people sit down in a group to smoke. They get a bunch of tickets for smoking on Pacific. A bunch of yuppies sit down to smoke. Cops wave.
Prime example being 2 days ago. Two or 3 days ago, we were sitting there, and the cop passed three people smoking, three yuppies smoking, to get us. And then wrote us a nice little ticket for it.
And when and where was this?
On Pacific in front of Del Mar.
And what time of day?
Morning. It was our morning, so about 2 o'clock.
And what's your first name?
Jonna.
And you are?
Mouse.
Thank you both, and may the tickets not be with you.
Oh, no.
Much as they are, thank you.
So, you are.
Well, I do have one other something to say. The whole, I just found out that there's the old, big old fire department scary police guys coming down all the way from Del Mar, going all through here, trying to take it, just going through every camp, every known, everything, for harassing everyone.
When did this happen?
It's about to, apparently. I'm not exactly sure. I've heard bits and pieces from different people, but apparently it's about to come through, and they're going to take it every homeless person they find in any camp, no matter where they are. They're in the towns, the forests, the woods, the cemeteries. They're going to get ticketed and get their name ran. And for a
going into slow speed again. Where do you? This may be a more of a paranoia rumor than a real.
Well, no, it's actually, like, I've heard it from a couple cops as well, that they warned me. A couple of the cops that actually are on my side said, you know, if you can get out of town, get out of town. Because
maybe they want to get you out of town too.
Yeah, they do. They do, but they're not as bad as some of the other ones. The ones that did tell me.
We've been talking with
who?
You.
Oh, Jonah.
Thank you, Jonah.
Of course.
So we're talking with
Many Paths.
And what, you say you got a ticket today, Many Paths?
Yeah, I have a service dog. He's registered with the United States Service Dog Registry. Sitting in the park, motorcycle cop came up, accused me of having a dog in the park. I said he's a service animal. I showed him the papers, and he kept questioning me about my dog, and da-da-da-da-da. They're only supposed to ask two questions. Is that a service animal, and what service does it do? And he's just like, oh, where did he get his training? And da 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 da. And then he's like, I don't believe you. I'm gonna write you a ticket.
Name of the cop?
I might have it on the ticket.
Let's take a look. And he was unable to find the ticket, but coming to the protest on Sunday.
I'm still here, probably.
All right. And there's a Huff meeting tomorrow on Wednesday, if you're interested. You know about Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom? It's a group that meets every Wednesday. And the time is, it's all accurate, except it's 11 o'clock, not at 10 o'clock in the morning. So we got good time report. Tell me about the good time.
Well, you know, there's certain places that you can just sleep on the beach and have a great time every morning. And wake up.
No hassles.
No hassles.